I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester. His name is John Anilio, and you're listening to the Functional Nerds podcast, where we accept stories about talking cats.
That is Patrick Hester. In addition to being a podcaster, he is also an author, and he has a brandy new book out. It is called Into the Fire, and it is the Samantha Cain Volume 1 book series. It is out through Wordfire. It has a lovely cover by Galen Dara, which Patrick is holding up right now. So if you're a fan of our show and if you're a fan of Patrick, I would recommend going and buying his book. It is available now as an ebook and as a trade paperback. So go and check that out. My name is John Anilio. I'm here too. And you know who else is here? Neil Clark. Neil Clark is a Hugo and World Fantasy Award-winning editor and publisher. He's the owner of Worm Publishing and the editor of Clark's World Magazine, Forever Magazine, and several anthologies, including the Best Science Fiction of the Year series. You can check him out at neilclark.com and follow him on Twitter at Clark's World. Neil, thank you for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
So, Neil, I just need to throw it out there that John and I occasionally have these emails back and forth where he's like, who should we back on Patreon.com? And I'm like, I don't know. Who should we back? Like, who's got stuff going on? He's like, I don't know. Let's look. And and then he'll like send me an email. Hey, Neil Clark and Clark's World has something. Should we back them? I'm like, yeah, we should back them. So we did.
Oh, and it went like this. So normally we will back people for a dollar here and a dollar there, you know, just, you know, showing support here and there. And so I'm like, all right, I just back him for a dollar. And Patrick's like, well, do two. It's two of us. So back him for $2. I'm like, all right, $2. And then I looked and I'm like, ooh, for $2.99, then you get the and I'm like, let's do $2.99. So then that way we get the stuff and then we can read the stuff. So I've been reading the stuff and it's great. So if you're not already a fan of Clark's World, which if you're listening to our show, you probably are, but consider going over to their Patreon because there's lots of cool stuff, lots of different levels. And as I said, Patrick and I back at the $2.99 level. And if you're a person who has a Kindle or an e-reader of some kind, then you get access to the Mobi and the EPUB and the PDF, and then you can put that on your Kindle or whatever you read it on. And you have lots of cool science fiction short stories. And what I particularly like is the nonfiction pieces. That's what I dig most about Clark's World. So I've been enjoying some of those nonfiction pieces. So go and check that out. Anything, you know, I mentioned the Patreon, Neil, but is there, maybe you can describe some of those levels that people can back you at and what they get for it.
And is that how you prefer people to like subscribe and back you?
Well, I tend to tell people that whatever works best for them. I mean, if they want to subscribe straight on Amazon through, so it's delivered right to their Kindle, that works for me too. We, between Amazon and Patreon, most of our support comes through those two avenues. But to sort of break down some of the Patreon categories, you know, at the lower end, we have what we call our citizenship program. So it's, you know, somebody can become a citizen of Clark's World, and over time they earn different titles. So it might be, you start off as a basic citizen, you might move to a Burgermeister, and at the top end there's overlords. And this is just a fun little thing we do because we have an annual anthology, and as by way of being able to provide a thank you, we do a census at the back of the book, and the census breaks everyone down by their rank and lists off all the citizens and overlords and everything. So up from that, we have digital subscriptions. We've got two different subscriptions there. One is for just Clark's World, and one is for Clark's World and Forever Magazine, which is my side project, which is a reprint-only science fiction magazine. And further up the line, we have a print subscription, so they can get print copies of each issue. And we're talking about rearranging or adding to those levels right now, actually.
John, I apologize. I have a question for Neil, because I know something that the folks behind Clark's World, that they like to play a certain video game together online. And I'm curious, Neil, are you familiar with Penny Arcade?
Yes.
Do you know Ilya, was it Iacta Est? I think it was, that was their guild on World of Warcraft. And I think it's still around. And mm-hmm. what they did, they basically had this guild, and all their fans and supporters could join this guild, and they could raid with them and all this kind of stuff. Have you ever considered doing a level where, like people can join you guys in the game and kind of play?
You know, no one's ever asked us, but we've talked about it. we play Destiny, for those of you who don't know, and we're all on Xbox One, so... It does sort of narrow the field down a bit, but we haven't been shy about saying, hey, we're on here, and we have a group, we have a Clarksville group, but it's just the three of us right now, Kate, Sean, and I. But yeah, we'd probably welcome more people if we knew others. And it's funny because several of our authors have actually contributed to Destiny in some way, shape, or form. And unfortunately, they're all on PlayStation, so we weren't able to work with them.
I just thought that would be a cool thing that you could potentially offer as an extra level.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, on that subject, we will normally get onto our picks of the week in a moment. Before we do that, we're going to talk about our Patreon, Patrick. So everyone, just go and join Patreon and back all the cool stuff that's out there, and including Clarksworld, you can support us. We'd like to thank the people that already support us. It really makes a world of difference. So for those people that give us $1 a month or $5 a month or whatever works for you, we are very appreciative of it. And if you dig these kinds of interviews and you don't already back us, consider becoming one of our backers. Just go over to patreon.com/functionalnerds and you can pick the level that works best for you. And it helps us out a ton and helps keep the show going. So we really do appreciate the people that are already doing it. If for some reason you can't do that, you can help out in other ways. You could tell a friend about the show. If people like that science fiction stuff out there that you know, then tell them to take a listen to the show. Or you can go over to iTunes and give us a review or give us some stars. That helps too. So whatever you can do to help, we appreciate it. Now, let's get on to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
Neil, do you have a pick this week? I don't know if you have a pick prepared or if you want Patrick and I to go first so you can think about it for a minute.
Why don't you go first?
Okay, Patrick, what is your pick?
So my pick is I was trolling through Facebook as people do when they're supposed to be writing. You know, I sat down and said, I'm going to write for the next hour, and then immediately went on Facebook. And I was looking around and I came across a post by Dave Gross where he was asking the question, you know, what current bands have the I forget exactly how he put it, John, but it's
something. I think he put it, who's the modern Led Zeppelin?
Right.
Who's the successor of Led Zeppelin?
In their heyday. Who sounds and is, you know, they're not trying to copy them, but who has that same, you know, flavor of Zeppelin in their heyday? And John was one of the people who replied with this band called Rival Sons.
Mm-hmm.
And what was the song? Patience and or something?
You know, I'm not even I like that band. I'm not a huge fan. Like, I haven't spent a lot of time listening to them, but when I have heard of them, I knew it was. So when he wrote that, I was like, oh, let me just go on YouTube and put Rival Sons in and see what comes up. And that was like one of the first videos that came up, and I put it out.
Yeah. And so it's Rival Sons, and I forget the name of the song, but it's Patience and Time or something. You'll see it when you do the search. And it was an amazing video and it was an amazing song. And I was like, wow, this really is a really good band. And they do kind of remind me of Zeppelin. So John, good job. Rival Sons is my pick. And
YouTube, because they have a ton of videos.
Yeah, and then I went on Spotify and I'm like, I'm going to add these guys to my Spotify. And so I search, and sure enough, they've got a ton of albums on there, like 5 or 6 albums.
Yeah.
And then Spotify does the thing where they add the extra albums that you don't really want. Mm-hmm. And like commentary, track by track.
Who oh, yes.
Track by track commentary. No one wants that. And
when I was younger, I may have wanted that.
Didn't. You didn't. Well, you're lying. No, you didn't. You didn't want that.
When I had more time.
No, you didn't. And I went through and I started saving those. And that's when I found out that Spotify has a limit.
Oh, okay.
You can only have 10,000 songs.
Interesting.
And apparently I had 10,000 songs. Because I was able to save one album, and then it said, nope, if you want to get rid of it, you got to get rid of some if you want the rest. And so I had to go through and I like cleaned out some albums that I never listened to or I only listened to once, and I added a couple more of their albums. But then I spent the rest of the day listening to Rival Sons. So really good band. I like them a lot. Good job, John.
No problem. Yeah, that dude has got a plant-like voice, rubber plant-like voice, and just but real strong and like that's very heavy riffs. It's cool. If you do dig that sort of 70s Zeppelin sound, I do recommend them. My pick this week is going to be season 2 of Voltron, which is on Netflix right now. I very much enjoyed the first season. Season 2 dropped, I believe, January 20th. I ended up starting to watch it a few weeks after that. Season 2 took a little time to get going. The first few episodes were a little slow for me, but then by the time you get into, you know, 3-4 episodes, it's really started cooking, and it's great. I think I picked season 1 when it came out over the summer. Obviously, if you liked the original Voltron, you'll like this, but it is made by a lot of the creative people behind Avatar The Last Airbender and Legend of Korra. So if you liked those shows, you will love this because it is a similar animation style, a similar balance of story and humor. And it's, like I've said before, what we remembered the shows from the 80s that we loved so much, what we wanted them to be like, that's what these shows are. Because if you go back and watch those cartoons from the 80s, quite often they do not hold up so well to adult scrutiny. But this does. And obviously it's made for kids too, but it's a really good storyline, really cool characters, great voice acting, just really good. If you like animated shows, I highly recommend it.
Voltron, Defender of the Universe.
It's got a great theme. Normally, I'll skip the themes on these. The theme music is awesome. I have to sit through it every time. So that's my pick. Neil, what is your pick this week?
Well, I've been sitting here going over the different things I've been doing, and largely it's been work. Since I went full-time, it's been catching up on lots of stuff. But the one thing I've been making time out of my schedule for is The Expanse.
Oh, yes.
So season 2 started, 2 weeks ago? And... so far I didn't think it was possible for me to enjoy it more after season 1, but season 2 seems to have started off really, really strongly. And, you know, it's probably one of the better science fiction shows, or definitely is one of the better science fiction shows on the air right now.
So season 1, now they went a little different from the books, and they had Avasarala in season 1, but there was something missing from Avasarala throughout the entire season 1 that they dropped in the first episode of season 2 that made me go, yes, finally. Did you catch it? Did you catch it, Neil?
I'm trying to think of what you might be figuring is missing here.
She's sitting at the table and all the guys are there and someone says, you know, well, this is how it works. And she says, I know how the fucking machine works.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And I went, yes, they let her cuss. Finally, they let her cuss. Yes, it was missing. And I think everybody knew it was missing. I don't know if they had to pay a huge fine. I don't care. It was perfect. It was a great moment. I was like, yes.
Yeah, The Expanse now, and I've read the first 3 books in the series, and I watched season 1. So for our listeners, if you don't have cable like I do, season 1 is available for free. If you have Amazon Prime, you can watch season 1 on Amazon Prime right now. I haven't watched season 2 yet. I'll probably wait till it goes on Prime. Or if I run out of shows to watch, I'll just buy it as I am wanted.
It was on Netflix. I don't know if it still is or not.
No, it's on Netflix if you don't live in the United States.
Okay, and then I also saw, like, when I'm watching season 2, it's saying that it's on demand as well.
That's probably the case too. Well, I think the way that it works, the rights to it are that it's on Netflix. And I think if you're not in the United States, it is as soon as the episode airs, it'll go on Netflix.
So I think season 2. All that matters, John, is season 2 Martian Marines.
Yes. Well, I'm looking forward to season 2 as well. And I enjoy that. Took a couple episodes for me to get into as well, because I think it's great, but it's not how I envisioned it reading the books. Like, the guy that they cast as Holden, different than what I thought. They cast him younger than I pictured him in the books.
Yeah.
So that took I like him as an actor, and I like that interpretation. It took a little while though, because that's not how I pictured him.
And Amos is not how I pictured him at all, but I like the guy.
Yeah, I like all the choices they made. It's just different than I imagined. And I think they were good choices. It just, they're different things. You can enjoy the books and then enjoy the show, and it's just a different interpretation of it, but they're both very good.
And I go back to season one, there is a scene where Miller is coming off of a shuttle, and as in the crowd are a couple of guys that go by the name of James S.A. Corey.
Mm. Yes. I know they have a lot to do with the actual show, too. Yep. Yeah. So, no, it's good on them. That's the way that you should. If you're going to adapt work, get the author's input, everybody. All right. Well, let's move on. So the first question I want to ask Neil, kind of a serious one. In 2012, you suffered a near fatal heart attack at ReaderCon in Massachusetts. Tell us about that day and how it has impacted your decisions that you've made since then.
Well, I had just arrived at ReaderCon, and the convention hadn't even started yet. We were getting stuff set up in the dealer's room, and I started, it was just after I had eaten, and I started feeling ill. I thought it was food poisoning and went back to my room. And a few hours later, we knew something more serious was going on. I should correct that. It wasn't quite food poisoning. I have allergies, some food allergies, and I thought the food that I had eaten was possibly tainted, with seafood. Fortunately, the Leahy Clinic was a block away from the hotel ReaderCon was in at the time. So I was over there in no time. And they immediately took me in put me under and put in some stents in my heart. I had what they classified as a widowmaker heart attack, 100% blockage in two critical locations. And I was there for a week. And then they let me go home. And when I got home, I ended up in the hospital that night with a kidney stone. Yeah. So I spent the next week in the hospital for that because they couldn't do anything due to the heart attack. 6 months later, they determined that the damage was extensive. They measure blood flow by something called an ejection fraction. And it's normally about 60 for a normal person. Under 30, they want you to get a defibrillator. I'm at 27. Mm. So I'm considerably lower. So 6 months later, they recommended a defibrillator, and I've gone on. So that made me a cyborg, which spawned off an anthology project. But you know, something like that, where you know, I can remember very vividly the first night in the hospital, the doctor came to tell me just how lucky I was to have survived, and you know, various people said, "Oh, we almost lost you," and I'm sitting in the hospital thinking, "I almost lost everyone." And it was one of those, you know, rough moments where you suddenly realize a lot of the things you cared about aren't important. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it sort of reshaped your priorities, and it changed my outlook on a lot of stuff. I don't get as annoyed about certain things as I used to, because life's too short. It's just sort of become the mantra I live by. It's like, is it important enough? No, life's too short to worry about things like this.
I should mention, for people that do not know Neil and have maybe not seen a picture of him, Neil is a young, trim, fit man. This is not
what are you trying to say, John?
I'm saying that it's surprising that you had such a big heart attack. I'm assuming it's genetics. Like, is there any reasoning behind it? Like, was no. diet like?
The doctors, I've had many conversations with the doctors in the last almost 5 years now, and they still don't know what it was. There's this rare occasion where, you know, over time your arteries will block up, a layer of plaque goes down and the platelets form over it, and eventually it fills. In my case, it was 100% like lightning burst. It just, my platelets went berserk and filled and formed two total blockages. They know it happens. They don't know why it happens. And so I had no genetic genetic indicators for no family history. I don't smoke. I don't drink. I did all the, you know, I didn't eat particularly badly. So there was no real high risk group that I was in. I was just very unlucky and very lucky at the same time.
Right. So as we mentioned earlier, as you mentioned earlier, is that you're now full time on Clark's World. So if you can, please describe the conversation that you had with your family when you decided that you were going to quit your day job and focus on Clark's World and your creative life.
Oh, boy. This has been going back and forth for years now. It's actually since the heart attack. Right after the heart attack, joy of joy, my boss, who said they would take care of me and do whatever they could to help me, fired me. My wife used to work in technology but had been home with the kids. So we both started looking around. I found something first with a place I had worked before. But in the meantime, I still had on this after the heart attack, I sort of realized I really need to get out of this profession. I'd been working in education and technology for over 25 years, and the joy was gone. It was a job I once loved, but the industry and the administration's change and the attitudes. So my wife knew I wasn't particularly happy, and a little over a year ago, she said, "Well, she'll start looking for something, because I was making enough money part time to actually see it as feasible." So last year she started looking, and after a couple of close calls, she found a job. Just last month. And it just happened that there was a massive implosion going on at my current employer. I was the eighth employee to resign in 6 months. The timing just sort of worked out. I was ready to jump without having anything lined up, but I've got two kids and a mortgage, so, and need the health insurance, obviously. So there was a lot of discussions, and I'm very grateful for her giving me this opportunity to make a run at being a full-time editor.
You know, it's interesting, because that's something that I hear a lot about with creatives and writers especially, is that in order for them to be able to do this, they almost always need a partner who, you know, kind of has the healthcare and brings home enough money to cover the mortgage, you know? And so that's just interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was one of those pieces of the discussion we had to have was how much could I bring in? And, as it turned out, I ended up buying the healthcare through the ACA before all the nonsense started. And that is a big concern for me right now. At least I'm in the program. I'm good for a year. We'll see what happens to it. But yeah, talking to other people who've done this, it quite often requires somebody else who's willing to make a leap with you. Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what nonsense you're talking about. That's not factual. That's I have no idea what you're talking about. You made that up.
Yeah,
I've noticed.
Well, that. I work in an industry that might as well be alternate facts.
I've noticed that as to what Patrick said of having a partner that, and as you said, that will make the leap with you. Oftentimes, spouses and partners of writers who do it full time, I noticed that a lot of times they do work in education or as something for the state or the government, because even though they may not make a huge salary, oftentimes they will get health insurance. As listeners of the show know, I work in education, and my salary is not awesome, but my benefits are very good. Nowadays that's a big thing. I believe Matt Forbeck's wife is works in education too, and they got like 17 kids too, so they have a lot of people to support there. So now. You talk about how you went full time with Clark's World, but maybe you can tell us a little bit about the early days, the steps that you took to get it off the ground. Because obviously, this doesn't one day you decided, "Hey, I'm going to start this and it's going to be awesome. And a lot of people are going to listen to it and read it. What were the early stages like? What were the steps that you took from sort of idea to getting it really off the ground?
Well, Clarksville's been going on 10 years now. So it's a not really an overnight success story. We built very slowly. So when we started back in 2006, it was a very different environment. Online fiction didn't get much respect. Sci fiction, which was at the time, I guess the only one that was getting any real recognition, had just shut down. So Sean Wallace and I were at ReaderCon, which seems to be the center of a lot of life events for me. and we were talking about online fiction. At the time, I had a bookstore, and I had been running online stories as samples from different magazines. And so we were talking about that and talking about why a lot of the online magazines had failed. And it was largely just a lack of ability to generate revenue or a sense of running a business. Somehow that evening we convinced ourselves that we could succeed where everyone else had failed. And by the end of the weekend, we had the magazine fully staffed. And 3 months later, we had our first issue out. After that, it was just, you know, being stubborn and persistent and, you know, treating people professionally and, you know, all the little things that a good business has to do. That first year, depending on how you look at it, we either broke even or lost money, because our entire first year was funded off of an anthology project. And the anthology couldn't come out until the first year of stories was done. That first year was largely subsidized by the bookstore I had at the time. And that shut down about 2 years in. And I decided I enjoyed the magazine enough to stick with it. And it's just slowly grown more and more. Ebooks really helped. Patreon really helped. All these little advances helped make the magazine grow into what it is today.
It seems to me like you're not afraid to take a little bit of a risk with something new that comes along. So I remember when you launched the Amazon subscription stuff, you know, I remember when you launched Patreon, it's like you guys just sit there and say, hey, you know what? This might be a way to keep going and moving forward.
Yeah. That's my background in technology. So I keep an eye on different stuff that's happening. And, you know, if something sounds interesting, I'll give it a try. There's lots of little opportunities here and there. And one of the parts of our business model is that you don't depend on any one thing. You sort of have many feet out there in different areas so that if one of them fails, you don't get sucked under. If we lost Amazon, yeah, that would be really difficult. But we've got, you know, enough of a footing with some of the other stuff that we could possibly recover and bring some of those people over into other areas. It happens that technology is a bit of a, you know, it used to be my day job. Now it's my hobby. But we're an online magazine, so we have to be able to think in those terms. And I guess our newer, you know, the last couple of years, my focus has been trying to figure out how to do things more internationally, largely because we're available around the world. So historically, magazines have always thought of themselves as an American publication or a British publication or Australian. And we're really a global publication, and we haven't really found a way to fully take advantage of that.
And that's interesting because if we speak to many science fiction and fantasy authors, and that is where a lot of folks flourish, is internationally. I know someone like Peter V. Brett. He does well here, but he does great like in Eastern Europe. Like all those Eastern European countries love Peter V. Brett. And so he's got a great career. He'll go on tour there and do great. So it seems like particularly in this genre, you're leaving a lot of the world out if you're not focusing on that. So now you're talking about getting Clark's World translated and that type of thing? Is that where you're sort of putting your focus on?
There's a couple of different things. I mean, we already have an existing partnership with Storycom in China.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the ones that have been helping us bring all the stories, the Chinese translations into our issue. Always on the table with them has been this discussion of being a little bit more bi-directional. So we've been talking about different things. For example, we've got an anthology coming out there that's bilingual. It's the stories we already translated, but in English and Chinese, and it'll come out in China sometime this year. But we have other projects down the line that might help us bring more of what we've published here over there. And that, I mean, it's still too early to say what shape that'll take. But yeah, if we could facilitate some of the translations of either entire issues or anthologies or whatever, that would be another source of revenue for the magazine. From what I understand, we have a reputation in China, largely developed through our willingness to work with them. So the community there knows of us. So that has some value, and now we just need to figure out how to take advantage of it.
So have you thought about, like, when Kate isn't hanging out on major Hollywood movie sets, like getting her Rosetta Stone so she has to start reading things in Chinese and French and Spanish?
I think she'd kill me.
You know, and I was going to mention, Patrick is referring to Kate Baker, who does the audio versions of the magazine, voice. The voice. And when did Kate come into the picture in Clark's World? How long were you guys going when Kate made her appearance?
I forget the exact timing on it, but we started doing the, you know, one of the things that I've always said is that we need to be where the readers are. So about 2 years in, we sort of realized, wait a minute, there's huge audiences for audio fiction, and you know, places like Escape Pod, you know, we're saying, you know, they had, you know, I think at the time something around 20 something thousand, and we're like, okay, well then there's probably a good percentage of that we don't reach. So we first, I think the first story we podcast was one by Mary Robinette Cowell, and she did it herself. And she did a few others for us at the beginning. At one point though, she was unavailable. So I asked her for some recommendations and she introduced me to Kate. And, you know, after the first story, I knew this was somebody we wanted in our stable regularly. And then I think it at WorldCon in Montreal that year, I invited her to be our regular podcaster, and the rest is history. One of the best hires I've ever made in any career.
Awesome. Now, before we wrap it up, you mentioned that Clark's World's been around for 10 years. And in that time, I suspect that you've helped to launch the careers of quite a few science fiction and fantasy authors. Could you share a story of what it felt like to read an early story from an author who's maybe gone on to success?
Oh boy. I'm trying to think who we published first, and it's you know, those are always really special instances where you discover somebody new. I think any editor will say that the best part of the job is discovering somebody who you know, you've never heard of before, and then to see them go on and get some good recognition. I'm reluctant to specifically name names because I feel like I jinx them in some cases. but there's been a number of them over the years where I've just, you know, I have their novels on my shelf, you know, because they're somebody who I worked with early in their career and I loved their work and I'm glad to see them succeed. But I'm also heartbroken when they get these novel deals because I never see a short story from them again. So it is a bit of a curse to see them succeed, but it's also really nice.
You're like that person that liked that band before everybody else. And you're like, I liked that band before they were popular. They were great on their first album, but you know, now they sold out. And so, you know,
I don't think that, you know, good for them, because they'll make money at novels, or more at novels than they will at the short stories. But I do miss them. I mean, it's a very different experience, short stories versus novels. And I think sometimes the field loses out when one of them gets so successful they can't write short stories anymore.
Yeah, and to wrap it up, to bring it full circle, I believe it was ReaderCon. I don't think you and I live all that far from each other, but we've actually only really seen each other in person at cons out of state. And I know we spent some time at a ReaderCon quite a few years ago, and perhaps at that World Fantasy. Patrick, was Neil at that World Fantasy that we're there?
I know Kate was.
Yeah, no, Kate was definitely there at the World Fantasy that was in Columbus, Ohio. That's quite a few years ago now, whenever it was there last. But I don't remember which one it was. I feel like it was ReaderCon. First of all, I think I bought a book from you, because I don't know if the bookstore was still going. I feel like I bought a Tad Williams book from you, and we knew each other from Twitter or whatever. And I do remember you and Kate and I and a bunch of other folks got some drinks or got something to eat at one point. And I do remember you introducing me like, John, this is Nora. And I believe that was N.K. Jemisin before she was N.K. Jemisin, before her novels got published. And I remember, so I don't know if she was an early person in Clark's world or not, but I know you don't want to like take credit for anybody's success. you're far too humble of a man, but I do remember meeting her very briefly years ago. This is, I think, before her novels were published. So I do recall that. I don't know if you remember that.
And each of those novels is over on my shelf.
Yes. All right. Well, we do have to wrap it up. Once again, you can check out Neil's website, neilclark.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Clark's World. We mentioned several times how you can go about subscribing to Clark's World, either through Amazon or Patreon, or it's just clarksworld.com, and you can go and check it out there. A lot of it's just online. And I'm sorry, did I get that wrong? It's not
ClarksWorldMagazine.com.
Thank you. I'm sorry. I have everything else written down. I don't know why I don't have that one right now. But ClarksWorldMagazine.com, or just Google Clark's World. You'll find it that way, I'm sure, too. And there's lots of different ways you can get it, lots of different ways you can support it, and audio, ebook, all that good stuff. Go and check it out. Neil, do you have any con appearances coming up?
I'm at BossCon next week. ICFA in Florida in March.
Tell Karen I said hi.
And then as always, I'll be at ReaderCon in July.
Sweet. So hopefully no traumatic events will happen at ReaderCon this year. It'll just be fun and we'll hang out. And I have to make it back up to ReaderCon. I was there twice and I really enjoyed it, and I haven't been up there in a while. But Patrick and I, you know, Patrick's got his book out, so maybe Patrick's gonna do the rounds and I'll come along with him, and I'll be his hype man, because Patrick's shy. So maybe we'll start doing the con circuit and we'll do some live podcasts and Patrick will sell his book. So there you go. Awesome, Neil, thank you very much. And as I did allude to with Patrick, you can get his book. It's Into the Fire, Samantha Cain Volume 1, through Wordfire Press. So go and check that out. It's ebook. It is trade paperback as well. So go and check that out. And again, if you enjoy what we do, consider becoming one of our backers over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. Neil, anything else before we go?
I have one anthology out last month, Galactic Empires. That's something that people can go and get. It's a reprint anthology that's getting some very nice reviews. And you know, if you don't like reading magazines and prefer a nice solid book, it's a nice 150,000 or 250,000 word anthology for you to read.
Excellent. All right. Go and get that too, everybody. All right. Have a great week, everyone. We'll see you next time.
Sunsmoke. I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves. And I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?
I'm the one in the middle.